Good morning.
Morning,
Bruce. Todd Grist. Doug told me I had 3 hours.
Is that okay?
And anybody from the South in the room?
What? I'll say.
What? I may have to get you to translate for me. I'm talking about Southern, like Alabama. That's fine. I mean, I've got some friends down there, but I'm going to talk a little bit differently about it. I've been in a leadership role for a very, very long time. I started out my career as an x-ray tech. And so 14 years in, I don't know if you, any of you know anything about strong Southern women. I'm married to one. And I was raised by a whole group of them. My first job was managing a radiology department that was mostly strong women, and they were my teachers. And so I had to learn how to lead differently at that point in time. So I'm going to draw some conclusions between coaching and leadership. I mentioned I'm from Alabama. Have you heard about the University of Alabama? I am not a fan. I'm an Auburn fan. And they just won the SEC basketball championship the other night. It was great. Bruce Pearl's a wonderful, wonderful coach. So I think I know how to report this. There you go. So, like I said, I want to draw some comparison between coaching and leadership. Because in our roles as leaders, our job, my job, and I think Doug mentioned that today I'm not the CIO, but I was one for 30 years. And so it took me that long to figure out I didn't want to be one. No, I'm just kidding. Is that the organization I lead is, my budget is larger than typically the company budgets of where I've worked previously. And so we're a 13-hospital system here in the Midwest of Indiana. And I have the opportunity to create the person who's going to take my job when I retire. And they keep asking me, what is that going to be?
It's 17.
But my wife says, no, not now. And so I'm married to a critical care nurse. We've been married for 50 years. I have 4 daughters. Thank you. I remind my wife there are people that are in prison that don't serve that long. I typically get hit. We've raised 4 daughters. That's why I have the daughter haircut. But I'm also was also a healthcare CIO, and I don't know which one is a harder job, raising girls or being a healthcare CIO. But they both require a lot of patience and money. And I love my girls, and I have 6 granddaughters and 1 grandson, and he's rot. He'll be 3 years old coming up in June. So I don't know if you know Ken Blanchard.
To me.
Okay, he's a great leader, writer, and also Doug Shula, who's also a great coach. Business and coaching. And this quote came from one of their books, and I think that it's very appropriate. The last one is from President Dwight D. Eisenhower, but I'm reminded that he was actually a general and a soldier before he was President of the United States. And I know leading men in battle, like he did during World War II, it takes a lot of leadership in order to get people to do what you want them to do, but they may not necessarily want to do it. And so he led from the front, and I really admired him for that. The other thing is that in business, I'm in healthcare. I've been in healthcare all of my adult life. I literally walked out of high school on June the 6th in 1971 and stepped into a hospital in June the 7th in 1971. And other than a very small stint going to the dark side of the vendors, I've been in healthcare all my life. So the terms that we use in business and coaching, they blend and be back and forth between the spectrum. And it's really great to see how those words can carry forward. So whether you want to be a coach or not, in the role of leader, you are a coach. And you have to look for those opportunities to help coach your people to success. Because I will promise you, and in a minute or two, I'm going to talk about making sure that you take an opportunity for those coaching moments. Because the behavior you get are the is the ones that you teach. So if you don't correct the bad behaviors, then you're telling everybody it's okay. And I have several stories over my career I could tell, but Doug told me I only had 3 hours, and so I don't have time to tell all of those. But the really important thing about our jobs as leaders is to get the right people on the bench, the right people on the field, and also have people that can back them up in the event they're not meeting the game plan of that day. So one of my most favorite coaches is John Wooden. Everybody knows John Wooden. He is an amazing coach. He coached for 41 years. When he was at UCLA, he won 10 national championships in 12 years, and he had 4 undefeated seasons. That's pretty amazing. It's not easy to get the group of young people to play at the level that he asked them to play. I've kind of watched Bruce Pearl do the same thing in Auburn. Auburn was not known for a basketball school. I went to UAB during the time that UAB was a basketball school. And my kids went to Indiana. It used to be a basketball school. I'm still waiting for them to get back to that. And so my children, my money went to IU. But one of the things that, you know, John Wooden, you know, has got a lot of success. I want to ask about the success that the accolades that were reaped upon him. He basically said he much rather consider himself as a coach, as an example of leadership and discipline. And these lists on the slide right there is the list that his father gave him. He wrote down his personal creed when he graduated from elementary school. Now, those of you who have children, I'm not sure how many of you thought that your kids could incorporate this into their life, but I think he really did. And this is what made him the man that he is. And so that tells me that his father was also a great coach and an excellent leader. So you're going to see a few military quotes of what I'm going to talk about this morning. How many veterans do I have as a resident? Thank you for your service, and thank you for the sacrifice of your family. So Norman Schwarzkopf says, when you're in charge, in command, take charge. And I think that's a very important thing. But there's another one on the next slide that actually I kept underneath the glass of my desk for about 20 years. And it's Secretary Colin. So doing the right thing doesn't mean that you always can make everybody happy, but you do the right thing for the right reasons. And then the other people will see what you're doing. I think Mike talked about being present and being approachable. But it also there has to be consistency in the message that you provide. So I'm going to talk about these, not necessarily all every one of them, but, and I know this is a little cute, but you raise kids, you wind up being cute if you're going to get a point across. And so you have to do communications. You have to overplan, not plan. You have to have an attitude, consistency, and honesty and humility. We're going to talk a little bit about each of those in just a moment. But the one thing that I'm reminded of, Socrates had a great saying, you have but one mouth, one tongue, and 2 ears. So I have to be reminded that I have to listen twice as much as I speak. And I was well trained by strong Southern women, but I also have a friend of mine that was an ER physician that taught me that I need to listen, not listen to what, so I can rebut, so I can have a comeback, so I can explain, but listen to what is being told. Because if you really listen to what's being said, there's a lot that's not said that you need to listen to. And so Tom taught me that if I listened very carefully, and he had a friend who was a cardiologist, and he was part of my training team as well, is that if you listen carefully, they'll present you with a solution, even when they're angry. And most of the time they were angry. I was a CIO, so it failed to me to go stand in front of the buzzsaw, but Tom and I became good friends. He was a great pilot. Unfortunately, he lost his sight. He can't fly anymore. So speaking of flying, and so when you have to have a plan, and you have to be able to communicate that plan over into your team, and we might talk about that, is you have to explain why you're doing what you're doing, but you also have to listen to get that feedback and look for those opportunities to provide that coaching. And I'm sure that Charles Lindbergh had a plan when he was flying over open ocean solo. I also bet that he had a plan of what am I going to do if I have to ditch this plane. But once he had that plan, he executed it. He knew what he needed to do, and he just innovated. And every time I see this quote, I think about Jimmy Stewart. He was the one that played Charles Lindbergh in the movie. Great movie, great individual. The other thing is that there was this long old saying about attitude equals altitude. I don't know where I heard that saying, but I really truly believe it's true. Now, the saying at the bottom of this slide is one of my favorite movies. It's Remember the Titans. And the reason I like this movie is there's two reasons. One, I was in high school during the exact same time period, so I truly understand the tensions in society that was going on at that time because I lived there. So did my wife. But the other thing about what the movie illustrates from a leadership standpoint, if you have a process and a plan in place to allow the people on your teams to succeed, and they know that you have their back, they're going to be successful. There's a lot of great rhetoric in that movie. If you haven't ever seen it, to watch it. There's another one that I like a lot. It's called Secondhand Life. If you haven't seen that one, it's a great one as well.
Good.
So one of the things that I'm really reminded of, I've watched the Masters. I'm a golfer, not a real good golfer. So if anybody wants to feel good about their golf game, come play with me. My father told me when I told him I was going to play golf, he said, son, the only thing you can afford is tees. He was right. But my wife lets me play because I think it gets me out of the house because I've worked a lot of days at home, and she said, just go and sleep. Come on. So one of the things I mentioned that I have four daughters. My number three daughter, when she was in high school, was a track star. She was, as my other daughter said, she's the girl that all the other girls hate. She's 5'10", blonde hair, blue eyes, and she was a jock. She, three relay teams that she ran on, and the cross country team set school records that have not been broken in 20 years. But the thing about it is, I watched those girls over the course of middle school and high school, and they were no more talented than anybody else that hit the field. The one thing they had was that attitude to win. And they didn't want to win it for themselves because, as I mentioned, she ran on teams, the relay teams, the cross-country teams. They won as a team. And they wanted to win not for themselves but for the team and for the school and for everybody else. And Katie is a social worker. And when she decided she wanted to be a social worker, I said, so what do you want to study? She said, I want to be a social worker. I said, have a seat. So that was the cue to me that I need to do some career coaching for my daughter. And she said, and I told her, I said, Kate, you know, we have some friends that are social workers. You know, they make a whole lot of money. She said, I know, Daddy, but I can make a difference. And so she makes a difference every day. She works at a school corporation in Southern Indiana. She runs the Blessings in the Backpack program. And when kids were out in COVID, she made sure they were fed. So, and I have another daughter, a number two daughter, that when she was in second and third grade, she had two learning disabilities that we found out about. And either one of those she could use as an excuse to not be successful and to have bad grades. But she didn't do that. And so now she is a elementary school teacher in the Shelbyville school system. So we had somebody from Shelbyville here earlier. So, she teaches at Loper, the elementary school, and she's really good at it. And her husband works for Doma. Anybody know who Doma is? No, nobody does. He runs communities for Doma. They're a database in data science. But the other thing, too, is the reason I mentioned my daughters in this is because I typically, when I give talks, I always include my family because it's personal to me, as is my team. I've been with Franciscan for a little over 5 years, and I've got to know each and every one of the folks on my leadership team and another level down. I don't know everybody, but I know their name. I think, Mike, you mentioned you need to understand their family. Work gets in the way of life. And so you have to treat the people as if they're part of your family, and they have to be allowed to be their family. But this slide is talking to us about playing to win and not to lose. I mentioned I think it was Roy McIlroy or one of the other golfers from Europe, that he was winning the Masters all the way through. The last day, he just blew up because he was playing conservative. Same way, I'm a Colts fan. Like I said, I'm an Auburn fan, and I learned how to handle disappointment really well. Barry Bryant always said that he didn't care about the national championship. He just wanted to beat that little Cal College across the other side of the state, and that was Auburn. But I've watched the teams that are making sure that they have a lead, they hold on to their lead, and they're not playing to win. They're playing not to lose. And that's really not the right attitude. It's like us in business every day. If we're not driving our teams, if we don't have goals that are really stretched, and we can't explain that to our team, and our team does not see us stretching our own self, then they're going to give you a mediocre performance at the very best. And so my recommendation is to play to win, not to lose. Healthcare is a very difficult space these days in order to play to win. My organization is owned by an order of sisters. And if y'all tell the sisters what I'm going to say, I'll say you misunderstood me. As sisters took a vow of poverty, and the rest of us did as well. Because it's about the mission of the organization of serving the communities and where we are. This is the second Catholic health system I've worked for, and I really, really do support that mission. Maybe that's why I have a daughter that's a social worker. I don't know. So our teams have to play in order to win, in order for the organization to be successful. And my role as a leader is not to be the quarterback, but I have to make a football analogy about my position. I'm in the center. I'm the guy that's going to hand in the ball. I'm going to run interference for them so they can be successful. And I'm successful when they're successful. And the organization is successful when everyone is successful. So the other thing that I'm reminded of is it's not what we say, it's what we do. And, you know, this may sound like I'm a little paranoid, but I've come to understand over my many years of leading teams and being responsible and accountable is they're watching. They're not watching you when you're at work. They're watching you when you're not at work. They want to know who you are as a person and how you manage your life as well. So, and I've come to realize that I'm never at work. My dad was a sheet metal guy and a welder. He worked for Goodyear for 43 years. And I always wondered, when I graduated high school, I asked my dad, so get me a job at Goodyear. Well, I won't tell you exactly what he said. My dad was a Marine. He fought the South Pacific. He could get quite tall. He said, no, son, if you want to screw your life up, you're going to do it yourself. I raised you to use your mind, not your back. And I come to find that he told my brother the same thing. So he wouldn't get me on a good year, so I didn't apply. I went to college. But the thing I always wondered, who was smart, me or my dad? My dad could do three-dimensional math in his head. He built three-dimensional objects. I think he was smarter than I am because when he was not at work, he was not at work. He didn't have to worry about work until he walked into the plant. But I'm always at work. I just ask my wife, she'll tell you. But the reason I say this, how many of you have seen Batman Begins? There's a point that Rachel Dawes, she makes a statement to Bruce Wayne. She said, it's not who you are underneath. It's what you do that defines you. And so that's another great quote, but it's not about what we say, but it's about more about what we do. So I mean, you read Good to Great. Great book. If you haven't, pick it up. They interviewed hundreds of CEOs and companies, and they found many that they considered to be great leaders. And these are the characteristics that they put in the book for a great leader. But the really interesting thing, they came up with this idea of the window and the mirror. And one of the things that each one of the what they considered a great leader was that when their companies did really great, they either apportioned that praise upon someone else or just good luck. And the other thing they did is if they didn't go really well, they looked in the mirror and they blamed themselves, not somebody else and not bad luck. And so it's that accountability that our great leaders have. Now, interesting enough, most of the five leaders that they talked about in that book, all their companies are now bankrupt.
They're gone.
So, but that book's written a long time ago. But the thing about it is that the very first attribute of a great leader they had was honesty and humility. And those are two characteristics that I've found in my life you can't fake, at least not for long. And Mother Teresa told us, if you can't feed 100 people,
feed one.
So if you can't help everybody on your team, help one. Because it's my job as a leader to ensure that if I decide that I'm going to retire, I'm going to do something else, or I get hit by a bus, that there's somebody else that can step in and do my job. And I think, knock on wood, I've got that person teed up. And he's going to be great at it. So the other thing is a strong leader will set the pace for others to follow. And this goes back to Chuck being a little paranoid. I've been accused of not being self-aware. Well, I'm a dumb old country boy from Alabama. Who the hell can be self-aware if I'm a dumb old country boy? Well, I did. My grandparents had a farm, and I worked on them farm. But the thing about it is, as leaders, whether we're aware of it or not, people are watching what we do. And so we need to be accountable all the time. We need, the other thing, too, is that you need to build relationships where they feel comfortable with you and you feel comfortable with them. You have to be approachable. When I first joined Franciscan, I was at my office, and up on the 11th floor, that's where all the execs are. We have a little building in Beech Grove. It's 11 stories tall. First six are parking garage. And I had a knock on the door, and it's one of my storage guys. And they said, can I come in and have conversations?
Sure, I see.
My door's almost up. He said, now, I'm not going to get fired for having this conversation. In my mind, I said, well, why the hell would I fire you for walking in the door talking to me? He said, well, we're not typically allowed on the 11th floor. And I said, well, guess what? The 11th floor is open to everybody. Your badge will bring you to the 11th floor, and come on back, see me anytime. So we talked for about an hour. And it was really interesting because I had other people come in after that when they realized that their new leader could be approachable. And I'm the first CTO that Franciscan has ever had in that executive role. And I'm a corporate. They call me chief. I'm not the chief. I'm just a guy that's responsible. I'm not in charge. Everybody else has to do that job. But the thing about it is I'm reminded is that everybody has a job to do and everybody has a role. I mean, how many of you have heard the story about when Congress went down to the Vertical Assembly Building while they were building Saturn rockets to put a man on the moon? Well, there's a group of congressmen who went down and they were having a tour of the Vertical Assembly Building, massive building, it had its own, it was so big. And they were there in the evening, most everybody else was gone, but there was a janitor that was sweeping the floor. And one of the congressmen says, well, what's your role? And the answer was, I'm helping put a man on the moon. And that's exactly what he should have said, because even, it doesn't make any difference what any role in healthcare is, we're all saving lives. Because we don't do our job, everybody else can't do theirs. So one of the things I learned in PowerPoint 101, other than to be absolutely boring but with great graphics, is to tell you what I'm going to talk about, do that, and then I'm going to tell you what I talked about. So this is my wrap-up slide. The thing about it is we have to, as leaders, we have to be adept at motivating people. If you're great at it, that's good. But I've found that being just who you are, you don't have to be somebody else. Because I tell everybody, particularly the people that come into the room to either sell me something or negotiate, if you don't like who I am, sorry. That's the only guy you're going to see. It's the same guy that I go home to my family every day. The same guy that I've been married to, my best friend for over 50 years. I am just that guy. You have to be very, very good about choosing people and to put them in the right role, and also be very good about moving the chess people, the chess pieces on the board to get them in the right role. I mean, Mike gave a perfect example of that. They moved him to a role that he could help the company succeed. And the other thing, the hardest thing is building teams. I've taught classes on building high-performance teams. It's not easy to do because sometimes your high performers are just pains in the ass. And so you have to help them understand how each member of that team is as important as the other members. There's no superstars. The one thing is, being a good communicator, I hope that I am one. I've been asked to speak on many occasions, and sometimes I get the point across, and sometimes I don't. Disciplinarian. You have to be willing to coach your people to the appropriate behaviors. You also have to be willing to tell them when they're not, because the things that you accept, the behaviors you accept, is what you teach. That was a hard lesson for me. I had an employee of 20 years, really bad behaviors, and I just let it go because he was a good guy. I knew his family. He'd lost his wife, and he had some hard times. But after a while, I finally said, if you can't get there, he said, we're going to have to do something different. And I still remember the day. He was in my office the day I was letting him go after 20 years. And it was the hardest thing I've ever done. However, I met him a year later on the street downtown at one of the parades we had, and he's bigger than me. And so he walked up, and I looked at him, and he said, and I didn't know what was going to happen. And he said, I just want to say thank you. And I'm going, Jared, what? He said, you letting me go got my attention. And he says, the next two jobs I've had, I'm now being very successful at it. So it may be a difficult thing to do, but it is the most important thing. And I actually had to do that to one of my best friends. He's still my friend 50 years later. I trained him, but he could not get out of bed in the morning. And when you're in radiology, the first guy in the door does all the morning forms and critical care and gets ready for surgery. I got tired of filling his slot, and I was his boss. And so I let him go. But Scooter was, today is very successful. I still don't know what his first name is. And that's what he goes by. His driver's license has Scooter on it. So anyway, the other thing is that I think that we as leaders, we have to, be of excellent character. I've had the privilege of working for and with, and that's an important differentiator for me, working with some great leaders, is Alabama doesn't get ice and snow very often, not where I was raised, but we had a snowstorm and an ice storm coming in, and I called my wife. I said, I get your dad to bring me some clothes over. I'm steady. And so that evening and the next day, those of us who were in the hospital were the only ones that could get there because everything else was covered in a sheet of ice. I delivered bedpans, I delivered meals, and I mopped floors. But guess who was beside me? The CEO and the senior vice president. They did exactly what I was doing. I needed to be there. They didn't need to be there. They could have stayed at home. They drove off the mountain where they lived to be in that hospital to provide services for those folks. So you have to be an example to your team. So I'm going to leave you with this one. So I think we as leaders have to be what we expect of our team. So be the change that you really want to see in the world.
So thank you very much.